He is Justin Davis, user experience designer and magnificent mistake maker.
Mistake maker. Perfect. I even have the shirt to go along with that.
And I know.
He is Aubrey Goodman, master at all things development and product creation and frontiersman of failure.
Ooh.
And this is a little podcast that we stumble our way through every week called Distilled. Thank you guys for being here.
So today we're talking about failure.
Yeah, absolutely.
As you may have already noticed.
By the way, if you're just joining us for the first time because you just heard about the podcast and you want to get in touch with us, you can get in touch with Aubrey at Aubrey Goodman on Twitter. You can catch me on Twitter at the most unusable handle in the world at JWD2A. Don't worry, nobody else remembers it. Either. You can grab the podcast on Podomatic or on iTunes as well by just searching Distilled. And if there's anything that you want to hear us talk about on the show, you have questions or you want to bring up a certain topic or something like that, just tweet that and hashtag it Distilled Topics and we'll make sure to grab that for you. So there it is. Now we can get into the meat.
Oh, yes.
Of this week. All about screwing it up.
Oh, yes. I am something of an artist at this. I think I very much identify with the entrepreneurship spirit. The entrepreneur is a really a strong role that I identify with. And being an entrepreneur is essentially being professional failure, because you are, from the start, working as quickly as you can to what doesn't work and then pivoting from there.
Yeah.
So there is essentially just a constant stream of failure.
Yeah.
And so I've been doing that myself for the last 4 years, continuing to fail.
Yeah.
Day in and day out.
Well, you know, it's part of the journey.
Indeed.
And unfortunately, it's a required part of the journey.
Yeah,
it's for sure. It's one of those pieces that we all end up doing, obviously. And if you take any risks, you're going to fail. And so you can look at that as a good thing, right? I mean, you can look at it, and you can say, well, I failed because I did something that no one else has tried to do, or I tried something out of my comfort zone, or whatever it is. And those are all good things. Those are all growth things, and those are reasons to celebrate failure. But it doesn't stop it from being an extremely painful activity when it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, like, we normally think of painful things as things like stepping on a nail or breaking an arm or, I don't know, getting bee sting or something like that. And so there's this sort of spectrum of how much it hurts and how it hurts.
Yeah.
And I'm really stretching out in the last year to expand on all the possible ways I might fail.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, that's good. You're becoming somewhat the connoisseur. Yes. Of failure, which is good.
Yeah. And again, I mean, it's funny. This is a very cathartic conversation, especially for me. And right now, I'm going through a lot of what feels like the bad kind of failure.
Mm.
But I know it to be the good kind.
Right.
That helps me to get to a better place with myself and with my community and, you know, my friends. And so through all of it, I maintain a positive outlook. I mean, it's so easy to get caught up in the failure and to feel like, oh, man, you know, just because I didn't make that sale this week, or like it seemed like it was really, you know, totally going to happen. And then like the last minute you find out, well, it just wasn't in the cards, or the other team had a better hand, or whatever appropriate metaphor there is, you know, and you just got to walk away and say shit didn't work out.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's interesting, too. And you were hinting on this a little bit, is to think about the types of failure, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think we can agree to some extent that there is good failure. There are ways to fail well and ways to fail badly.
Yeah.
All right. There's good failure and bad
graceful failure. And, yeah. And then that other kind where you're just like, somebody catches you on YouTube and then you get like a million views because, oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And so it's interesting because I've never really thought about until right now the different types of failure and what ways might be good and what ways. So let's tease those out. Let's talk about what those might be. Let's talk about what good failure looks like. Or should we say bad? Let's start with bad. What bad failure looks like.
Okay.
When you fail bad, I think that when you, I don't know, I have a couple thoughts. One, I think if you screw it up once and you learn from it and you do the same thing again and screw it up again,
yeah,
that's bad. Now you're just dumb, right? That's stupidity. Well, it's different, you know.
Yeah. Fool me twice. Yeah. Can't get fooled again.
Yeah, exactly. That's it, right? So I think that is in the class of bad failure.
Yeah,
failure due to lack of effort is certainly a bad type of failure.
Oh, that one.
Right?
That one rings rather. It's a plucking on a heartstring right there.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we fail because we don't try.
Right.
Sometimes we fail because other people that we work with also don't try.
So we can fail people and people can fail us.
True.
Right? Yeah.
Like failure, I mean, especially with a team and in a team dynamic, it really is all about, you know, there's no individual failure in a sense. I mean, there is, but not really in this context. You know, you're succeeding or failing as a team. So I'm assuming, I guess, that there are individual failures that lead to team failures.
Correct. Yes.
And maybe there can even be individual successes that lead to team failures. I don't know that I want to get all the way down that branch today.
Boy, that's
chapter in a future book, I think.
Right. No kidding.
But the team failure is part of the team's internal growth.
Right.
So failing to communicate because you said something that pissed someone off is good failure. Because you're introducing drama. That's the failure part.
Right.
Because you're not succeeding in working through it peacefully and easily.
Yeah.
But you're failing in a way that helps you to learn that what you just said, oh, shit, that sucks. I'm sorry. I didn't mean for that to hurt you in this way. So now I'm going to, you know, kind of take a step back and say, well, wait a minute. And that's where that compassion angle comes in, which we talked about last week, I think. And if you can work through that, then that's the good kind of failure, because you failed. Maybe that's what it is. It's failure that inspires you to grow in general as a result of the experience is the good kind of failure.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, where I was headed with the communication issue is, if you are trying to communicate and someone else is not,
sure,
then that's the bad kind of failure.
Yes.
Because essentially it's like, okay, well, it leaves you at an impasse.
Well, yes, but
there is no growth.
I think in that case, right, like you are not failing.
Right.
Somebody is failing you. Right. Again, so this is a different type of interaction. Yeah, but I mean, it's still in the ballpark. It's still in the same world. It's just, you know,
it's not progressive.
The roles are reversed, right?
Yeah. So how to identify when you are failing successfully? Like the good kind of failure.
Yeah, I mean, I think you sort of hit it there when you said that when it inspires you to improve when you fail and you're able to, well, let's start with the most obvious. You actually get your ass back up off the ground. That's probably the first sign of good failure. As opposed to just laying there, right?
Yeah.
The
kick me again problem.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I think that the inspiration for correction, the inspiration for learning and growth is a part of that. And it's funny because there is a... This gets into the area where perspective can essentially turn good failure into bad failure, right?
Interesting.
Because the same two people, or not the same two people, that doesn't make any sense at all. Two of the same people, that doesn't make sense either. Two people could fail the same way.
Right.
and the both of them may fail in such a way where they tried hard. They didn't fail for lack of effort and didn't fail because it was a prior failure. They just repeated, right? The two classes of stupid failure, bad failure. So they both tried something. They both tried hard and they both failed at the same thing. One person's perspective, however, doesn't permit them to grow from that. Just to give up and leave, right?
Okay.
Whereas the other person, and that all of a sudden turns what could have been a good failure into bad failure. That's why perspective is so important in failure.
Agreed.
Right? Because you can take what actually is an opportunity and completely squander it.
Agreed.
Yeah. And it's all a perspective thing.
That one also plucks a specific heartstring.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Thanks for that.
This therapy session brought to you by?
Yeah. It's public therapy. I just like, it's only one step up to me. No, I'm really joking here. From like putting myself in stocks and having like designing a robot that throws tomatoes at me.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. Wouldn't that be awesome? An automated self-torture robot?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Stock, you know, no.
That would be fantastic. Stock.me. Is that...
Stock me. My stock? I don't know.
My stock, yeah, I don't know. That would be awesome, though. I need to build that. It's interesting. I think that perspective is always so difficult. And it's one thing I always have to remind myself of this as well. All of us have, like, those little momentary times in the week when... or the month, or whatever, the day, or hour, if you're just having a terrible day, where, like, it just feels... You get so locked in, you get so... sort of, it feels like closed in, like, there's no way to write this, there's no route out, you feel very down on yourself and all that kind of thing. And it's interesting, time is a wonderful perspective maker, right? Because sometimes just waiting and doing nothing actually changes perspective its own.
Right. Just you taking a little while to let it sink in. This is one of the things I really love about email, actually, and asynchronous communication, which we have talked about in the past.
Yeah.
You can take a moment, draft an email. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I have... been in a situation with somebody in a professional scenario where there's some conflict about communication, trying to work with another team, trying to work with someone who doesn't understand what the hell I'm talking about, and trying to help them make decisions that work with a larger team, but ending up feeling like they may say something indelicate and not realize that they're being offensive,
right?
And I'm being offended.
Yeah.
And I'm writing them an angry email. And sometimes those emails are really quite hostile.
Yeah.
Where do you get off?
Yeah.
How do you, I put a lot of, you know how that goes.
Oh, yeah.
Or I'm sure you've written them and hopefully hit cancel like I did. But that's the key. The cancel part is where that gets fun.
Yeah.
And just that whole thing taking a little while. Sometimes you write it out, you think about it, you let it marinate, and you just let it sit.
Yep.
You don't say anything, you don't make any action, you get it out there, and it doesn't need to be communicated right away, but you need to communicate it in some way.
Yep.
And email and like drafts and stuff like that, that's great. Being able to save stuff for later, that's one of the things I hate about text messaging. It's just, there's so many ways that you can be impulsive in a detrimental way.
Yeah. You know what they actually should do? Somebody needs to build a piece of software. I don't know how you would do this, but do sentiment analysis on incoming emails. And then on the reply to the, like, and you could even mine the social graph to see the strength of relationship and like the nature of relationship. And then when you hit send, like automatically just makes it a draft instead. and like just won't let you send it like for 24 hours, right? Okay. It's like, it's likely that what you're writing right now is not what you want to send. So we're just going to go ahead and not let you send that.
This is fascinating. So this is an interesting segue into some a video I saw the other day, maybe last week, that I saw, I think Ashley Mooney tweeted about a video conferencing thing that they're, that she was talking about it in the context of Google Glass, where it's like it uses the video stream from both sides to provide you or the other person or both, you know, however that works. Like it gives you feedback on like it, while you're in a FaceTime or Hangout or whatever it is. They're like, they're not paying attention. You're talking too much.
Oh, God.
It tells you like you have been muted. You've been muted because you are talking too much.
Wow.
And it's like,
that is awesome.
And so, like, but it tells
AI
you things like
social correction.
Yeah,
that's
but it's not
cool.
Correct. I mean, it's just suggestion engine, okay. And that's why I like the mute. The auto mute is too far.
Yeah,
I feel like
I don't know. For some people, not too far.
Well, I mean, it depends on if it's a one-on-one conversation.
Yeah,
auto mute seems a little much.
No, auto mute in
one
that
on
case,
many
probably.
Is
yeah, I mean, there are practical issues with it. Like, wait, that person just disappeared. What happened?
Right,
like, issues. Right. But I do like the suggestion piece. And I would also like if the suggestions got more painful somehow. Like haptic feedback that was so violent, it actually hurt your
like,
face.
Hey.
Ow, okay, I'll
okay,
stop
okay.
talking. Jeez.
Right.
That would be great.
And, like stuff like what this video was showing was things like you're the other person, I mean, it shows their name, like whoever it is annoyed.
Yeah.
Or bored.
That's weird.
Change the subject now.
Could you imagine, though, the liability in that, right? So if you get it wrong, it's like, are you annoyed at me? I mean, especially, there are certain... I'm not even going to go where I'm going to go. I'm going to retract all of that. Okay. Anyway, that'll be in a B-side that
dear.
You'll have to pay a lot to hear. So anyway, that's that. By the way, this popped up and I wanted to mention it. I get added to a Twitter list called Unusual Euphemism.
Okay.
Which is just a wonderful name of a list. I don't know how many people I'm on this list with.
Uh-huh.
It's not a very long list, which makes me feel really good, actually. Anyway.
Unusual euphemism.
Unusual euphemism. That's great.
Cool. You have been listed on...
Yeah, man, I feel like I'm in some sort of society.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it high society. Anyway, back to
failing.
Failing, right?
Are we still failing?
I think it's a bit of a meta conversation,
isn't it?
Failing at a podcast while talking about failing.
While failing,
yeah,
at talking about a podcast.
Yeah, right.
About failure.
Oh God,
it keeps going down.
Turtles
folks.
And turtles and turtles.
Yeah, and they're broken turtles too.
Yeah, that's of
the,
course.
That's the problem.
Half upside down. Anyway,
yeah. But yeah, we fail in those conversations in an interpersonal way. We fail to acknowledge those scenarios. So what that software is providing you is a feedback where you are either not able to see the writing on the wall or unwilling to acknowledge it when you do see it.
Right.
And that's a social thing that you either learned the wrong way or never learned the right way to allow for space for other people.
Yeah.
And this is something that I have battled with for my entire life.
Right.
My whole family, every single person talks over everybody else and it's fucking annoying.
Yeah.
And
interesting.
I never knew it was fucking annoying until like maybe college into after that, like starting to realize that like, oh, hey, so all those crazy drama things that people talk about being like in Hollywood. Oh, that's my family. Shit. People just don't have any respect for each other.
Yeah.
So they don't make room.
Is it psychopaths that are unable to? Or sociopaths. Are unable to read other people's...
Yeah, they lack affect.
Yeah.
You can't understand someone else's emotion.
Right. And so then what the Google Glass app is essentially like a mediator for sociopaths.
It's exactly
like,
that.
Let me help you, like, which actually could be a very valuable clinical tool, right, for those patients to say, like, we're going to give you a thing that's going to help you understand how to interact with people so that you aren't such a pain to interact
such
with.
A pain in the ass, yeah. Or such a complete sociopath.
Right, yeah.
But, see, I think of it in a lot of different ways here. When I saw it, I was like, okay, that's really awesome. That means that sociopaths can learn how to be better manipulators. Great.
Oh, God.
No, awesome. No, we don't want that. Because, you know, that's how they are. People who are sociopaths are going to use the tool they have to their advantage a manipulative capacity. It's very, very common for sociopaths to do that. Because they lack affect, they don't feel bad about hurting people.
Interesting.
So they do it anyway.
Right.
That's why we don't like them.
Yeah, technically not.
There's another aspect of this that I thought was quite fascinating. When I thought about it, I didn't immediately jump to sociopaths, I think. I hope. But I did immediately jump to autism spectrum and the autism spectrum conditions have that same sort of a symptom. So they all lack affect as well.
Right.
So I was thinking that for people who are in the high end of this, and maybe it just adds a natural offset bias to the entire set. So if you're way down in the spectrum, way up in the spectrum, you have like a 31 score, it'll just bring you down to like maybe a 28.
Yeah.
And if you have a borderline in the middle around 16, it brings you down to maybe 12 or something like that,
yeah,
and helps you to cope with how other people's emotions matter to you.
I would be curious to know, and this is a larger question about both what you're talking about, which is autism, and sociopath, whatever the word is, the noun.
Sociopath.
The word for that condition.
Sociopathy.
Thank you. Could a tool like that actually teach people with those conditions, like train them, like train that ability back into them?
Right. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
By being introduced to it and having it as a feed that says, "Hey, you're being mean."
Or like, so then you
they
learn
feel
you go,
hurt right now.
Oh, I'm starting to understand what mean means.
Right. Associating the specific situation. And this is one thing. I may have mentioned this at some point on air, but when I tested myself for autism spectrum, I'm like a point less than the high functioning autism scale, which
perfect.
Is like 15. I'm at 15. The cutoff is 16 out of 32. So, I really resonate with a lot of this stuff because many of the reasons why I have failed in both the good and bad ways in the past has been directly resulting from my either inability or disinterest in your emotional state.
Right.
And so in the last year, I feel like my points have gone down a little just because I'm really focusing and intentionally, making a point to embrace compassion and empathy and go the extra mile to understand when other people are checking out.
That's interesting. That's a useful Google Glass that I can actually buy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably
even
one of the first.
Might be
actually
worth the $1,500.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's like we were starting to talk about how we can really help ourselves and each other to get along better.
Yeah.
Many times I have asked girlfriends, like in the process of breakups, that to just say, I know there's something wrong. Clearly there's something wrong. But the thing I feel like that's wrong is I am not understanding you and you are not understanding me.
Right.
And we need to talk more about it. And a lot of times they don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And generally that's a pretty good sign that it isn't going to work for me because I need to communicate. So,
right.
But in those processes, I always say that, they'll say specifically, I'll say, can you give me a specific example of this behavior that you're talking about that you find annoying or offensive or whatever it is?
Right.
Condescending is one I've battled with. That I feel like I've mostly figured out, but being really vocal about your failures helps.
Yep.
So
uh,
totally lost my train of thought.
Fail.
See.
Yeah.
So no, I ask them, but I say, what can you give me a specific example of this thing that bothers you? Because I need to see in the moment when you are bothered by it that you are bothered by it.
Right.
And their attitude is, you should know.
Right.
It's right there. You're just not paying attention.
Right.
And my attitude is, wait, but I am paying attention. I'm trying to anyway. Maybe I just don't know how. Help me out a little here.
Right.
You know? And so there's this sort of give and take. Now, what I asked for in there was, tell me when I need to, like, that thing I need to know about.
Yeah.
They're not going to tell me.
Right.
I'm coming to terms with that slowly.
Yeah.
Slower than I'm really prepared for. But if I had a tool, a software tool, that would allow me to be alerted in those cases when I'm not paying attention.
Right.
Then I wouldn't have to ask them to do it.
Right.
You could a system would help me without their knowledge at all. And that sounds amazing to me. I would love to have.
So this is like assistive social technology, AST. That's what I want to just create a company called Assistive Social Technologies that all it is computer aided social interactions. It would probably. You could probably go raise money just on that name.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it would be so cool. Yeah.
You wanna pivot?
Yeah, no kidding. Let's see. Recommendations. AI run social mediation software. Okay. That's a reasonably close rate.
Real-time facial analysis that produces emotional, like, realistic feedback that's correct.
Right.
Shit.
It's very interesting. It is going to be interesting. I mean, to tie this all back into actual technology is to say, you know, it'll be interesting to see where we are able to get in terms of mediating social interactions with technology, because that is actually something we're not very good at doing with technology yet.
Yeah.
And interestingly, as a final note on this, through the technology that we've built over the past 20 years, email obviously changed how we communicate. IM back in the day, and chat and Twitter and all this has introduced a major problem into our communication. We all understand this now, and that is misunderstanding of intent, right? Because we don't have the face-to-face interactions. We can't read emotion when it's mediated by just text, right? And what's interesting is I'm actually shocked that this hasn't happened yet, except for the fact that emoticons exist, is how long will it take for the very technology that created this problem to solve it?
Well, mic I don't know. Drop. I mean, I think. please don't drop my mouth.
Yeah.
I think we're there.
I hope so.
I mean,
but you know, there's nothing that's happening in email like, oh, the tone of this email sounds insert emotional tone.
Not yet.
Sentiment analysis and that type of thing.
Well, but that's because there's a quality loss. Video doesn't lose quality. You get all the video, you get all the perception that I can get with my eyes.
Right.
And my ears.
Right.
So that should be enough to get enough data to actually glean what is statistically your emotional state.
Well, what I'm interested in is going that one step further, which is to say, in times where we otherwise humanly couldn't figure out what intent is, except for we can figure it out in our heads probably by reading an email, have a computer be able to do the type of sentiment analysis on it that says, this email is coming in is slightly hurried, slightly hostile, slightly annoyed, slightly very happy, you know? And I think actually there are ways to do this. By doing long-term pattern recognition against common type of patterns like use of certain punctuation and that type of thing, and word density and that type of thing.
Yeah, it's a big data problem.
Yeah, I think you can actually do this.
And here we are, right back to Hadoop and fucking MapReduce once again.
Ladies and gentlemen.
We seem to center on this MapReduce every time we end up talking at all about about technology.
That's it.
Well, folks, you have invested
Yeah.
Or failed to to attend to something else for this half hour.
Absolutely. Oh, and
we think of that as a good failure.
Yeah. I also do want to make a point. Sorry, random technical note really quickly. During the course of this, the update for Drawer went from waiting for review to in review to processing for App Store.
Wow.
In the course of time that we've been recording this process. So,
well, then, congratulations.
Somebody, Apple's doing their job, so that's good. All right. Ladies and gents, we will see you guys next week and try to fail up this year or week or whatever.
Thanks for listening, folks.
See you.